Brian Fenley.
Welcome inside the Power Hour with Mark Forrester, presented by Walls Furniture and Mattress on 92.5 FM and 1340 AM WMUN Muncie. Follow along on Twitter at Mark WMUN or Facebook at Mark Forrester WMUN. Local sports talk begins now.
Welcome into the program. It is the Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Glad you're with us on the program today. A lot to get you here. I'm in the big studio today. Leslie's got master control going on there, and we've got a locked and loaded, ready show for you. Big win for Ball State Baseball yesterday. We'll discuss a little bit of that at the beginning of the program. A little bit of Indy 500, a little bit of NFL. We haven't touched on the NFL this week. The Colts, it's not so much Colts-related, although it certainly will affect the Colts when they hit the field in preseason in August and, of course, the regular season in September. Just some rule changes, and this is typically the time the NFL does those related items. So we'll get to some of that. A reminder, tomorrow we're live from the 1925 Clubhouse at the Courtyard. Looking forward to having Mike Fleck, Ball State men's golf coach, and his champion golfer, Cash Beller, who won the NGI Invitational this past weekend. That was a big win. Basically the NIT version in NCAA men's golf. Ball State had the individual winner in Cash Beller. So looking forward to that conversation tomorrow, and from all indications, we will have a chance to be on the patio tomorrow, which is exactly what we want. Exactly what we want. So we'll get to a lot of that on the program. Your calls are welcome at 765-287-1340 at Mark WMUN on Twitter. So the NBA playoffs continue. And I kind of mentioned this yesterday that and others have kind of followed suit. Not that they're following me. Many would argue maybe I'm following them. That there's a sneaking suspicion that I think this series between Boston and Miami is going to get really interesting really quickly. I don't know why I feel that way, but there just feels like momentum kind of got stopped by Miami. I'm not saying Boston's going to win the series because they still have to win three more to get that done, but I got to tell you, it's going to get a lot more interesting a lot more quickly than I think people are realizing. But again, you could say all that right now, and the series could be over tonight. So, of course, Miami went up 3-0, and Boston won on, what was that, Tuesday? And so tonight they have a chance to take two in a row, and then really the big shift in the series would be if Boston won tonight and they go to a Game 6 on Saturday night, and Boston gets that done, man, it gets really interesting for Game 7. You know, it's never happened in the NBA. It's happened in Major League Baseball with my beloved Red Sox, which, by the way, I don't know if you saw this, but Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown channeled their inner Kevin Millar from 2004 saying, "Don't let us win one tonight," and they won the first one, so I don't know. We'll see. It could be over quicker than we think, but there's just a feeling out there that this could get really interesting, and we might have ourselves a historical moment in the NBA. Never has a team come back from a 3-0 series deficit. So anyway, again, George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin is going to join us in about 20 minutes from now, and a lot of it will be centered on new rules in the NFL, one that is particularly controversial because it's the it's the predominant rule of bridging the two eras. We know you can't hit the quarterback. We know that you can't really launch yourself at a defenseless player. And this is like the rule that bridges all of the past and makes it even more present, if that makes sense. So we'll get to that here in a little bit. But we start here. What a win it was for Ball State Baseball yesterday in the first round of the Mid-American Conference Tournament, remaining in the winner's bracket of the MAC Tournament. And it wasn't an easy win by any stretch of the imagination. Ball State won 7-6. They never trailed in this game. got up 3-0, and there were several points in the game Central Michigan got within a run, including in the ninth inning. Ryan Brown got the save. He got the big out at the end of it, and you could see the emotion and the excitement and the jubilation and maybe a little bit of a sigh of relief, because clearly when you play a game like that and knowing all that Ball State baseball's gone through to give themselves the shot that they wanted against Kent State coming up later today is exactly what they were looking for. So they have a matchup against Kent State, and this is a true road matchup, and we know what just happened, but that is immense resolve. Immense resolve to be able to fight through the different emotional, roller coasters that you have in a game like that. One-run games, that momentum can absolutely shift. And in baseball, all it takes is one swing of the bat. All it takes is one missed location from a pitching standpoint. And by no means was it a perfect performance, but you get the win and you get out this time of the year. That's the point. You know, not everything's going to be sharp. We already know that Ball State's dealt with injuries from a pitching standpoint, and it's been a rocky up and down stretch, including the final series last weekend. But there's something that in sports, and especially I think last night in that moment, that you look at and you say you can't measure some things by statistics. That was a pretty heartfelt win in a lot of ways. You know how they say you write a heartfelt note? No. It's a little different when it comes to sports, but the premise is kind of similar. Ball State had a lot of heart in gritting that one out. Big time. Getting up 3-0. Then Central Michigan got two runs back in the third. Then Ball State added two, so they're up 5-2. Then Central Michigan makes it 5-4. Then it gets tied up in the fifth inning, 5-5. The tie is broken in the top of the eighth when Ball State gets a couple of runs, one by Adam Tellier and another RBI right after that. And Ball State had just the right amount of separation, but by no means was that ever a game that was secure. Very different than some of the games that they played this season. But fitting with Ryan Brown coming in the game, I was following a little bit of Gus Martin's coverage from the Star Press and making an appearance back in it, and fitting to get that save, and fitting that Ball State did it against Central Michigan. If you recall last year, Central Michigan was in the loser's bracket. Ball State hosted the Mid-American Conference Tournament, and they would go on to win two games in a row and kind of steal the Mid-American Conference Tournament title from Ball State. What I will tell you is this, okay? This is interesting. It kind of feels like, does it not, that year after year in these Mid-American Conference tournaments, the number one seed doesn't always win it. And quite frankly, it actually happens more often than not that the one seed does not. Now, I will say this. The one seed in this particular circumstance is hosting the tournament. That is a massive advantage. But look at what happened last year, and it was kind of a dead heat between Central Michigan and Ball State for the Mid-American Conference regular season title a year ago. But Ball State was the host, and Central Michigan still kind of beat the odds and beat Ball State. So the point is this, that not – and you kind of feel like in Power 5 – conference tournaments, big matchups, that there's a clear number one. And the Mid-American Conference kind of feels like there's things up for grabs and that your seed is, well, just that, your seed. And could you also think, if you're looking at this from a Ball State perspective, did Kent State throw its biggest punch last weekend when they put up 50 runs in a three-game combined series? For Ball State, look, the MAC regular season title was already out of the grasp, so you kind of pack up and move on. And you move on to this. And of course, you couldn't look ahead and you couldn't talk about this scenario until you got what you got done last night, which Ball State did. So I don't know if any of that stuff matters. It's quite possible that Kent State is just that team, and they're that much better than everybody else. But again, you put yourselves in the position you want to be in, And by the way, this is still a double elimination format. So if Ball State loses to Kent State, they go down to the loser's bracket, which means Central Michigan, and actually we can kind of take a look at this right now, because Central Michigan and Kent State played earlier today in the loser's side of the bracket. And you know what? That's another part of this. So Ball State played at 6 o'clock yesterday, okay? They're playing at 6 o'clock again tonight. Had they lost yesterday, they would have played in the 12:30 matchup in the loser's bracket to kind of keep their season alive. That's not a lot of rest. It's basically like you're playing a two-hour game. You get done at 8, 9 o'clock, and you're right back over there at 10 o'clock getting ready for what is a do-or-die sort of situation. So looks like this one was complete. I'm trying to find where we can find this and see the actual, let's see. We don't see a result yet, but we're gonna take a look at that and maybe get to the home screen here and figure all this out. So anyway, Ball State is going to have an opportunity to face off. Oh, here we go. Maybe we'll find it here. So Central Michigan did get the win against Western Michigan, got them 5-2. So it will be Central Michigan tomorrow if Ball State was in the loser's bracket. Basically, if Ball State beats Kent State, they kind of wait to see what happens with that first game, and then it's right back right back on the diamond, and then you have the opportunity to just win one of two. You can get it done with the first one or whatever. So that's the way the double elimination format is. But Central Michigan did get the win over Western Michigan. So Western Michigan is officially eliminated from the Mid-American Conference Tournament. So sets up a really interesting set of circumstances tonight for Ball State and Kent State. And again, we're going to find out, I think, a lot in this matchup tonight, knowing just how good Kent State is. Is it that much of an overwhelming difference? And because you saw them and they put up the amount of runs against you, are you able to adjust? Because there is an argument to be made that Kent State may not have seen Ball State's best, because after game one last weekend, you kind of pulled things back, kind of got the rest. You didn't want to push the issue because there was really nothing to gain overall. And it's worked out in your favor, but got to respect the gritty performance by Ball State to get that done yesterday. So, again, the matchup with Kent State, 6 o'clock. It's in Kent, Ohio again. Kent State, by being the regular season champion, has the benefit of hosting the entirety of the Mid-American Conference Tournament. So that's coming up. You can tweet us at MarkWMUN on Twitter. Also the phone, 765-287-1340. So we'll give you a full recap of that tomorrow when we're live from the 1925 Clubhouse at the Courtyard as well. Certainly no matter what happens tonight, there is a game tomorrow for Ball State, and we'll react to all of the situations accordingly coming up. George Bremer from the Herald Bulletin is going to join us in about 10 minutes from now. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about sports and what was the previous era and what, the current era has. We're getting that a lot, obviously, in basketball because we're in the midst of the NBA playoffs. All these reviews and the lack of contact that puts you in position for a flagrant foul and what you couldn't do 20 years ago and what you can't do now. Well, the NFL's getting awfully close to getting to that same bar basketball's at because they passed a rule that is labeled all over the place with a safety measure. This is all a safety measure when it comes to kickoffs. And that is basically any fair catch inside the 25-yard line is going to come out to the 25-yard line this upcoming year. So basically de-incentivizing the traditional kickoff. Now, it'll happen, but again, if you just, do the normal fair catch, it's going to bring it out to the 25-yard line. So, the risk-reward, some kick returners will take that initiative, but, the overwhelming analytics point to what's the right play here is make the fair catch. So basically what it is, it's doing all the different things that the NFL's already done. Can't touch the quarterback. If you hit him above the shoulder pads, you're going to get flagged. It's going to be a 15-yard foul, and it's going to be a significant foul at that. You can't hit a defenseless player. They've kind of been moving towards this kickoff rule. I don't think anybody is necessarily surprised, but this offers a major step. I don't think this is just another rule and another step. I think this is a big-time signal by the NFL that the game is moving more and more to less contact, as weird as that sounds. How can you have a less contact sport? It's always been my question. But according to the NFL, their analytics, their percentages, and their numbers are suggesting a higher amount of injuries on the kickoff. By the way, if you're looking at this from a college football perspective, this rule's already in place. So, in some ways, the NFL's following the college football model, which is kind of the opposite of what it normally is. Usually, you know, schemes and different plays and rules and little tweaks here and there, NFL puts it in first and college football follows suit. Not this time around. College football was the trendsetter with this to, you know, protect players. And again, you can go into a long conversation about what's really protecting the players, but at the end of the day, we're going to see more and more of this. But again, it's significant. It's a strategy. Now, it's not going to affect you offensively and defensively, really, but the game's going to look different. And it was so funny today when I was listening to other shows and kind of reading stories about this. Like, is there going to come a point in football in general, not just college, NFL, whatever, overall, that will not, I guess, reference the start of a football game being a kickoff? You may not even notice it when you say it, but how many 1 o'clock kickoffs do the Colts have? You say it every time you're talking about, oh, hey, when does that game kick off? Yeah, hey, it's 1 o'clock kickoff. Hey, Notre Dame's playing at a 3:30 kickoff. That signifies the start of the game. Just like, hey, it's a 3 o'clock tip for the Indiana Pacers. When are we going to start referencing football games and not, I think we're moving towards a different terminology overall, which is, I know, a little nuanced thing. And, you know, you could always just say, oh, the game starts at 1. But we all say in football, right, just like baseball, first pitch. Football's the one sport where that could change. There may not be a kickoff in 5 years. Kind of feels like if you're moving towards this direction, I mean, you could probably hang on to this rule for quite some time. But the NFL will tell you, and they did after making this rule change and adopting it, that this is not trying to take the kickoff away, but it's hard to argue that that's not exactly what's happening right now. So, I'm not here to be the right or wrong and have a strong opinion on it. It's not going to change the fact the rule's in place. The rule's going to happen, but you got to look at the larger picture and say, hey, folks, I mean, we might be heading towards a no kickoff situation, which will be strange, right? I mean, when we're referencing the start of a game, it doesn't feel weird to say, hey, that Colts game starts just after 1 o'clock. No, it kicks off at 1:07 or whatever the case may be. It's going to be strange. It's going to change some terminology, but that's the rule. And then the flexing of Thursday night football games, I think that's one of the things that we'll ask George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin. And this will likely affect the Colts. And I'll tell you why. If there's a better game and they expect the Colts to not be quite as good, wouldn't it be the teams that are on the lower end of the spectrum that might be flexed into a Thursday night football game? Because it's not exactly, I know it's primetime, but it's not exactly like Thursday night football is the best the NFL week's got. Usually that's in the 4:25 window or the Sunday night football or Monday night football window. Thursday is kind of an afterthought. It's a standalone game, yes. It's in primetime, yes. But it is handled way differently than Sunday night football is and Monday night football. And I argue the 4 o'clock window is one of the marquee windows of the week for the NFL. So when we're thinking about the flexing into Thursdays, does that actually hurt the teams that are at the bottom of the drafting order? So those are two things that the NFL is doing that everybody's got an opinion about. I mean, what do you want me to say? I'll just report the news. But that's where we're headed on both of those aspects related to the NFL. So thanks to those of you joining us on Facebook Live. We're going to talk a little bit more Ball State baseball. Also, Indianapolis 500 related. Tomorrow's going to be every guest we have, we're going to be asking them their driver and who they got for the 107th running of the Indianapolis 500. I will save mine for tomorrow. And mine, if you've listened to the show enough this week, it will not be a surprise. So we'll discuss all those things as the 107th running of the Indianapolis 500s tomorrow. We will, I don't know if we're going to be quite as crazy as Carb Day is at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, but I will say we're going to have ourselves a good time at the 1925 Pub House on the patio right here in Muncie tomorrow. So hang out with us if you so choose. Tomorrow, Mike Fleck again will be with us, and Cash Beller, the NGI individual champion, that invitational. That's a big moment for Ball State men's golf. We'll have both of them on site with us tomorrow, and of course, Ben Morgan and the crew from the 1925 Pub House at the Courtyard. All right, when we come back, we talked about some of that NFL news. We'll get George Bremer from the Herald Bulletin's opinion on a lot of those and some Colts-related topics. It's coming your way next. You're listening to The Power. It's on the Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. All right, welcome back in, Power. Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. It's brought to you, as always, by Walls Furniture and Mattress, located on Nebo Road in Muncie. You can shop online anytime, wallsfurniture.com. I was there today. The showroom is absolutely packed. For you to find what you're looking for, whole mattress section, and the showroom is stocked full. Stocked full, and you'll get it quickly. 48 hours or less for 90% of what's on their showroom floor. And you can browse and shop online anytime, wallsfurniture.com. Anywhere you are, at any time. No matter where you're listening from, no matter where you are, Walls Furniture Mattress can help you right there. But if you want to visit their showroom in person right here in Delaware County, head over to Nebo Road in Muncie, and you can check them out anytime right there. All right, George Bremer from the Herald Bulletin joins us. You know, it's kind of interesting because, I don't know what you consider the most dead period, but it feels like there's always a story. Right now it feels like it's nationally with the NFL, but is this one of those, I don't know, I mean, I know there's OTAs and different things happening, but is this one of the most down times, or does that really hit in June and July for you?
Yeah, that's really in June and July. Once mini camp's done, probably the biggest dead period on the NFL's schedule is from there to the start of training camp, because you don't even usually have a whole lot of roster movement there. There might be, a signing here and there, but for the most part, that's kind of the NFL vacation time. The coaches don't really get any vacation time. They're still doing it. That's really the only time of year I can think of where you don't have to be on high alert pretty much every hour of the day, just waiting to see what's going to happen next.
Yeah, and kind of one of those things right now where there's a lot, honestly, you don't want a lot of new news. Like, if you have new news right now, it's usually not of the positive variety, but, the Colts are making minor roster moves and little things here and there. From what you've seen, the core of this team, is it what it's going to be now to what it's going to be in July when training camp hits?
Yeah, I think they're pretty set at this point. You never know what's going to happen with a veteran popping free somewhere else. I think that's the big thing right now. If somebody gets in a contract dispute, or somebody just, a team suddenly makes a decision to go in a different direction, and it's an area of really need, you could end up with a significant addition. But really, from this point on, you're looking at guys that are being waived, with very little experience from other teams. I think the bulk of this team is the way it's going to be right now. The next really big wave comes, right at the end of training camp. When you get the cuts from around the rest of the league, then invariably you're going to get a couple significant additions. But between now and that last week of August, you're probably not going to see a ton of change to the roster that's going to make a headline. It's going to make anybody, really take notice.
Well, and on that note, I think there was a lot of projection with this roster that because of some of the performances from veterans last year, that some of those players might be subject to being released, and they always come as a shock, but it happens all across the league. did we already pass that point? Or some of the guys, I mean, you know, like guys like Kenny Moore, Ryan Kelly, and those guys might have been trade guys, but in some cases, could we see a surprise veteran released partly to recoup some cap, but also just from the fact of the matter of moving on from them?
Probably, again, not till probably the end of training camp. Once you start seeing some of these rookies come in and seeing how they fit in, you can see it happen. I don't think of Kenny Moore or Ryan Kelly, but some guys who, you know, are at positions that are pretty deep. I think the tight end group, for instance, is going to be really interesting to watch right now. You've got seven guys on the roster right now at that spot, and none of them are really what you would consider to be camp bodies. You know, guys that are just sort of here, undrafted guys, or guys who have never really played in the league anywhere else. Everybody on that roster right now, tight end, is either a draft pick of the Colts or has had at least a somewhat significant role somewhere else in the NFL. So I think, you know, that's a spot where you can see a surprise cut. Everything else, I think it comes to what these rookies do. You know, they've got to come in. Their job is to come in and take jobs from people. And the veterans, they've got to raise their level play and hold them off.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. George Bremer from the Herald Bulletin's with us. Sorry, you cut out there. I don't know if I cut in front of you by accident there. George, okay, so, this, you know, a lot of the stories, again, we mentioned are national and some rule changes. The first of which is the kickoff rule. We explained it a little bit a moment ago before you jumped on with us. How do you feel about it? What exactly is the NFL going for here?
Player safety situation, I don't think there's a lot of people happy with it. No coaches really that I've heard from seem to be all that excited about it. The special teams guys in particular are upset. You're taking away reps both for return guys but also coverage teams. You know, there's guys that make rosters. Ashton Doolin talked today down there in Indy about, you know, that's how he made a roster initially, but coming out on special teams, making plays as a gunner. You're taking away some of those opportunities. It's going to be more difficult for some of these guys to catch the eyes of a coach, you know, and to hang on and get that time that they may need to develop as a receiver or a linebacker or a running back or wherever it may be that, you know, that you're on special teams. It's the goal right now. They did a study. They feel like the last 2 years, concussions have really gone up on these plays. And they think that if they can get this fair catch instituted, it's going to, you know, make players healthier. And they're always going to err on that side of things. It'll be interesting now to see how it actually plays out in practice.
Does this rule, to you, make it seem like we may not be far away from a day where there isn't kickoffs anymore in the NFL?
I don't think so. Talking to, you know, I heard on the radio today on my drive that, from Rich McKay, who is the, you know, chairman of the competition committee, has been years, and he said they're more likely to just keep moving around with how they, you know, present it. One thing that I think is interesting that's been out there is the XFL rule, where they kind of move the two lines of scrimmage closer together. The return team and the kick team, I think, are only about 5 yards apart in the XFL, and that's something that they said they're going to look at as a league. See what the numbers are coming out of the XFL, see how they might be able to adapt that for their own uses. But I do think that they're, right now at least, there still is seemingly from the competition committee a desire to keep the kickoff as part of the game. I think that's the problem with this rule. I think it changes it too much. It does sound like they might be open to some other ideas that might allow the return to come back in a little bit.
George Murray from the Herald Bulletin with us. Now, one of the things that I think is interesting about this, it's very much like, I guess, the rule when they were reviewing a lot of the roughing the passer things. I had somebody ask me the question, like, is this one of those things that they could implement and then realize, wow, we kind of want this back? Could they revert course? Or is this one that when you go full force with it, it's like you got to commit to it?
No, they're presenting this one as a one-year experiment. So it's definitely something that they can revert. And it sounds like they are open to the idea. What's interesting right now is the coaches were pretty strongly against this, and they were more or less ignored during this process. So I think that's going to be a part of this too. You've got the coaches right now who are a little bit angry as a group about this being implemented, and I think they're going to push for something again like that XFL rule to be implemented in the future, because I don't think anybody really wants to see kick returns completely eliminated from the game. And this rule right now, the way it's written, it's going to come pretty close to doing that.
I think it's kind of interesting. I was explaining that if there was ever a time that the kickoff was eliminated, we can't say 1 o'clock kickoff anymore, right? I mean, we'd have to say 1 o'clock start time. I don't know.
Yeah, that would be tough. That would be a difficult thing, but we'll see. I do think that you've got the coaches here fighting and pushing to keep this as part of the game, and I think they're, at least it sounds like, they're open to kind of exploring some outside-the-box ideas, which I think you need to do here.
Yeah, no question. It's George Byrne from the Herald Bulletin, covers the Colts. All right, let's get to the other, the flexing of Thursday night football. Now, much like you, I listened to a lot of different perspectives, and this is one that they've described that it's kind of a last-ditch scenario in moving around the schedule, so it may not be as prominent early on, at least, as it has been in the past. My question would be this. Yes, it's a standalone game. Yes, it's a primetime game, but we all know Thursday night football and the list of different games is not as marquee as even some of the 4:25 kickoffs on Sundays. Would this be reserved in a flex situation for teams that would be bottom of the barrel? And in the Colts situation, if they struggle early on, could they be more apt to be flexed to Thursday night than like good teams would be flexed to Sunday and Monday night football?
Doesn't sound like it. And I think that's part of the problem here. I mean, they're talking about it being from week 13 to 17, and it sounds like they want to use it in a similar way to what they're doing with Sunday night and Monday night. And I think for me, the part of this that really disturbs me, I think you're messing with competitive balance now. I mean, I can't imagine what's going to happen if you take a game between, let's say that like Pittsburgh and Miami are battling in that wild card range in the AFC, and you've got a December game, which is going to hold an amazing amount of importance, and you're going to suddenly flex that, which the good news is it's 28 days, so it's going to have to happen a month ahead of time. But in November, you're going to make the decision to flex that late December game to Thursday night, and then you have a situation where a key player or more than one key player on one side or the other can't go because it's Thursday but could have played on Sunday. I just think this is going to open a can of worms that it's really going to become a competitive balance issue.
So how do you expect this to play out?
The way they're talking right now, you can only go between weeks 13 and 17. So it's going to be, 5 weeks there, late in the year. And you have to have a month ahead of time. So that's part of why I don't expect to see it happen a lot, because I don't know how often you can feel really confident that a matchup a month from now is still going to be an impactful, meaningful game. I think what they're trying to do is, if they have a game on the schedule like the Denver Indy game last year, if you see a month ahead of time, that one doesn't look like it's going to be very valuable to air. I think that's where you're going to see the change happening, just trying to get the really bad games out of there. I really don't feel like it's something you can legislate out entirely, though, and because you're always going to have, especially with a 28-day window, you know, a team that was playing pretty well and dives in that 28-day window, it's too late to move the game. But I think that's what they're trying to do. I think the end goal is to get rid of those really, really, really stinker games.
It's George Byrne from the Herald Bulletin with us. What do you want to draw out of minicamp, and what type of stories are going to come out of this?
Yeah, you know, I think the big thing right now, as it has been all year, is watching Anthony Richardson's progression. Today, Mo Alie-Cox said just from Monday to today, he's seen growth, you know, in the young quarterback. Hard to really say. We've seen two practices, well, I guess three, two in minicamp and then the one today. it's hard for me to really say I saw significant growth today, but you do see him doing positive things. And I think that's, they just want to see those get built upon. It's tough when we're only out there once a week because he could have a bad day the other 2 days we're not at and we wouldn't know. But I know that, you know, Shane Steichen had a lot of praise for him today in terms of some of the high-level stuff that he's doing. He looks good. He should. You're in shorts. There's no real pass rush. You know, this is time of year that if he wasn't doing well, it would be a bigger red flag than it is a positive that he is doing well. But I do think that's what you're looking for. Can he stack these days? Can he get to a point where it's just expected that he's going to make a big play every day? I think that's the most important thing. And then the second most important thing is everybody staying healthy. I mean, like you were talking about before, if there's news right now, it's usually bad news. And more often than not, it's concerning somebody getting injured.
All right, my final one is this. I think the next set of stories coming out of the Colts are extensions for guys like Michael Pittman Jr. and Jonathan Taylor. Any sort of indication that those two guys could be holdout guys if it doesn't happen sooner rather than later?
I don't think so. Pittman in particular has said that he's willing to, you know, play this year and see how the chips fall. Taylor, it sounds like there's mutual interest on both sides right now in getting something done. I almost expect that one to be done before the season starts. We'll see how everything plays out. He just changed agents. He's with the same agency now as Shaq Leonard. And I know that the office has put a priority on that one. So I think they want to get that one done sooner or later. Like I said, I think Pittman is willing to sort of bet on himself. The better year he has this year, the more he's going to be able to command. And he's also in a situation where the Colts have either got to let him hit the market. You know, there's a fifth-year option. There's not a fifth-year option on either one of them. But I think the running back situation is around the league is a little more depressed. I think Pittman's in a good position now where he can basically, at the end of the year, force the Colts to either let him hit that open market or franchise tag him. He's going to get a ton of money either way.
George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin with us each and every week. You think there's not football news? There always is, and he's the man that's got it. Hey, George, have a good rest of your week. Good Memorial Day weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
No problem. Enjoy the race.
Yeah, we will. Yeah, that's George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin with us. I want to get to Michael Pittman Jr. I think that's an interesting thing to bring up. And yes, the franchise tag is very much in play. But at the same time, you got to look at this from a very different perspective than I think we've been looking at it before. I want to get to that when we come back, since George just brought it up. Again, we talked some Ball State baseball. We'll get back to that here in a second. Also, Indianapolis 500, plenty of that to discuss tomorrow. Those are the two main topics going on right now. But let's get to Michael Pittman Jr. when we come back. You're listening to The Power. This is the Talk of Muncie, WMUN. All right, welcome back. Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN, brought to you by State Farm agent Jason May. Make sure you get all the discounts you deserve by calling Jason at 747-7100 today. Glad you're with us as always. So, George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin brought up something very interesting related to the Colts. Michael Pittman Jr. in his looming extension, actually, I asked the question, he provided context, thinking that there's not going to be not as much talk about that as there might be Jonathan Taylor, which I find very interesting. And this is why I find it interesting. For a long time, we've discussed, hey, the Colts need more wide receivers. They need more depth at that position. That's an area that they don't have a lot of electric playmakers, and they've kind of piecemealed that position group and just kind of done what has been needed in the given moment to get the job done. It's very possible we're looking at it from a different perspective as we head into this year, and what I mean by that is this. You take away Michael Pittman Jr., what do you have? Now, I think Michael Pittman Jr., if you put a rankings up, it would be tough for him to enter the top 15 of wide receivers. Top 20, probably. But top 15 wide receivers. Now, when you're talking about the top of the top, you're talking about the best teams in the NFL that have a marquee number one no doubt about it, wide receiver. And oftentimes, you know how we describe Michael Pittman Jr.? We say, well, he's not that guy. He's not Tyreek Hill. He's not Ja'Marr Chase. He's not Justin Jefferson. And you're absolutely right, he's not. But he's your best wide receiver. And honestly, that comes down on Chris Ballard, to be totally honest with you, but that's a conversation for a different day. The point is this, you know, unless you have a better option out there to be, you know, to be your wide receiver, your number one wide receiver, if it's not Michael Pittman Jr., who is it? Like, I think that's very concerning, honestly. Now, if I were the Colts, would I give Michael Pittman Jr. one of those big-time contracts that guys like Christian Kirk and, Jefferson and Chase and all these guys, T. Higgins, who's the number two in Cincinnati, which is wild, would I give Michael Pittman Jr. that commitment and that amount of money? I'd have a hard time with it, but also you kind of backed yourself into a corner in a lot of ways. So, for a long time, we've looked at the wide receiver corps as a collective group and said, what's going on with this group? Oh my gosh, Michael Pittman Jr. is your best. What do you got out of it? But maybe you should look at it from a different perspective and say this. If Michael Pittman Jr. is there, dang, what do you really have? I mean, it ain't good, folks. Now, there's promise for Alec Pierce, okay? You just drafted Josh Downs. And maybe if, you know, Pierce pops this year, and Downs is a steal in the middle rounds of this NFL draft, maybe you feel a little different about Michael Pittman Jr. and those sorts of things. But as we sit here with what we know right now, Michael Pittman Jr. is your number one, and if he's not there, goodness gracious, what do you have? He did catch 100 balls last year, okay? And again, I'll go back to what I just said. No, would I want to give him the $100 million six-year deal? That's a tough one to swallow, especially with what he's not. And he's not Justin Jefferson. He's not Ja'Marr Chase. He's not, DeAndre Hopkins. He's not those guys. But he's what you've deemed as your best because you haven't gone out there and gotten anybody better than him. Which, I guess in a nutshell, probably tells you everything you need to know about that position group. So, yeah, you've got the ability to franchise him if you want to, but you're going to be committing a lot of money to him, and it just feels like when you do the franchise tag, especially for guys that you basically, and this is what you're saying about Michael Pittman Jr., you're saying, you know what, hey, go prove it. Go prove yourself. Go do that. But you know what he's doing? He's proven it for the other 29 or 31 teams in the NFL as well. And to a guy in this day and age in sports, when you say go prove it, it means to them, you don't believe in me to give me that sort of commitment now. You want me to go out and prove it. So then when you're franchising him, guess what? It's just a matter of, well, hey, last year you wanted me to prove it. I did. Now you got me on the franchise tag. Now I want more. It happens with quarterbacks all the time. We let it slide, like the Dak Prescott thing that you hear about constantly on sports talk radio, what they didn't do the year that they should have done and committed to him. So again, it's a game, and it's a gamble. And if Michael Pittman Jr. does well, it probably means you're doing well, but it also means that Michael Pittman Jr. can go right back in your face and say, you told me to prove it, I did. Now I'm going to demand more, and now I may want to go elsewhere. So, tough game to play. I don't envy the Colts in this situation because he is the ultimate fringe guy that you commit to. He is really, truly a two, but at the same time, he is he's the best you got. So there you go. All right, one more break, and we're back at it to close up a Thursday edition of the program, Power Talk of Muncie, WMUN.
You're listening to the Power Hour with Mark Forrester, presented by Walls Furniture and Mattress on 92.5 FM and 1340 AM, WMUN, Muncie.
All right, back for final time on the program, Power Hour. The Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Glad you're with us. Brought to you, as always, by Sheriff Goslin Roofing. Your roof is there to protect your family. Make sure you're doing all you can to protect them. Sheriff Goslin Roofing has been helping families for generations. Remember to call Pete Dahlia or look them up at worryfreeroof.com. Big matchup for Ball State baseball tonight. It is the winner's bracket side of the Mid-American Conference Tournament. And Kent State, their matchup, they played a three-game set against Kent State, so very familiar with them. 5 days separate the last time they played against Kent State. This time in Kent, Ohio, the first pitch is scheduled for just after 6 o'clock coming up tonight. Winner heads to the championship round, and that would mean they would have two opportunities to win one game to become Mid-American Conference champions. If Ball State were to lose tonight, they would then have to defeat Central Michigan to then head to the championship round and have to beat Kent State twice. So again, there's a lot of pressure on tonight's game for both teams. And really, if you want to talk about pressure, it should be on the number one seed, Kent State. They're hosting. It's going to be interesting. Really, really interesting to see how that plays out. But certainly a gritty win. They had to earn every ounce of it last night against Central Michigan, a 7-6 win. It was tied in the fifth inning. Ball State broke the tie with a couple of runs in the eighth inning and sealed it out with Ryan Brown getting the save for Ball State baseball. You give yourselves a chance, and whatever the heck happens, you have that opportunity coming up tonight. So Ball State, Kent State, coming up tonight just after 6 o'clock. We'll be monitoring that and talking about it tomorrow as we're live from the 1925 Pumphouse at the Courtyard on the patio. It's going to be a spectacular day. Hope many of you are heading down to Carb Day at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Ball State baseball and, of course, about men's golf with Mike Fleck, the men's golf coach, and Cash Beller, who won the NGI Invitational. Individual winner in that inaugural tournament. They will both be with us and looking forward to having that conversation there. Big thanks to Leslie back in Master Command. Fantastic job by her and setting up George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin with us today talking Colts live on the road tomorrow at 4 o'clock. We'll talk to you then here on the Talk of Muncie, WMUN.